Welcome to the Miko Pellet Hour. I'm Miko Pellet, your host. Happy New Year. I had a rare opportunity to spend the New Year's Eve, the evening of New Year's Eve, at a great event at Bus Boys and Poets, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. Andy Shalal created this wonderful space for us, so a whole bunch of spaces for us here in Washington, D.C. And at the location I was at on 14th Street, there was open mic, and it was a great event, a great evening, people expressing themselves on a whole variety of different issues in a space that is safe and tolerant and very, very mixed. So that was beautiful. There was a lot of poetry, a lot of emotion, a lot of politics, which of course I like, and so on. So I want to thank Andy, who preceded me with his show just now, for creating that great space for us. In case you don't know who I am Miko Peled. I am an activist and writer. My main issue is Palestine. I was born and raised in Palestine, in Jerusalem. And I have written two books. One is The General Son, Journey of an Israeli in Palestine, which is the memoir, my memoir, but the story of my family as it relates to Palestine and injustice, the story of the Holy Land Foundation 5. So those two books are available for anybody who's interested. I also had a career in martial arts, and I decided to just start teaching once again. So I have a small class, kids class, that I started teaching here in Adams Morgan. So if anybody's interested in that, it's capitalkarate.org. You can find out information about that as well. I'm really excited. My guest needs little introduction. It's Jill Stein, Dr. Jill Stein, who has made a decision to run again for president as a candidate for the Green Party. She's run before. She was one of two main reasons that I decided to join the Green Party when I did several years ago. The other reason was the Green Party's platform on Palestine, which is probably the most progressive, and I believe the one that's the most in touch with the issue of Palestine than any Green Party in the world, and certainly any party here in the United States. And I think she's a wonderful candidate. I was very happy to see that she's running again. And I asked her to join me so we can talk about why she's running and what are the issues that she cares about most. And maybe even more importantly, why should people vote for her for president? And one of the comments that comes up or has come up when I told people I was going to be interviewing her for this program was, maybe the most common one, which is why not vote for the worst of two evils? In other words, why not vote for Biden when we know that if we don't vote for Biden, we're going to get Trump or somebody like Trump? And I think hearing this from her is going to be extremely important. I've made my decision. I mean, I'm not here to endorse political candidates, but I like Jill. I believe in her. And, she's going to be my choice. But I think it's important for everybody to hear what she has to say. So, Jill, thank you so much for joining me, for taking the time on this New Year's Day. We are pre-recording. It's no secret. So thank you for joining me. And let's start with the first most obvious question. Why are you doing this again? Why are you running again?
We're in a lot of trouble, put it that way. And the American people are saying it's time for a change. It's time for a deep change. And we're seeing that all over the place in the uprising of working people, in young people who are swamped in debt, in the unbelievable economic disparities, which are actually worse now. Racial disparities are actually worse than they were back in 1960. The disparity between the income of a white family or a black family is bigger now than it has been, in this, well, more than this century, like in the last 60 years, basically. Things are going terribly off the rails. And here we are with these two zombie candidates that people don't want. They didn't want them first time around, and they even don't want them more now. Just look at the poll numbers. People are screaming for other choices. It's the highest it's ever been since Gallup has been following this. Somewhere around 63% of voters are now saying, give me something else. I don't want to vote for these two parties that are throwing us under the bus.
But at the end of the day, isn't it at the end of the day, isn't going to be a choice between those two candidates? And isn't giving a vote to you throwing away a vote that could save us from what people fear so much is a Trump comeback?
Well, that's what the powers that be would like us to believe. That's certainly the talking points of the DNC. But to look at the polls, that's not what they say, because you see people who are actually so angry at Biden for having misled us, for having promised Wall Street that nothing would change. And in fact, nothing has changed. Disparities just get worse. Inflation just gets worse. The cost of living just continues to skyrocket. And, Joe Biden reactivated student debt when he didn't need to, and when people absolutely couldn't afford it. We have Biden who ran on the promise that immigration policy was going to get much better, but it basically has not changed whatsoever, not in any important way. We are squandering $1 trillion a year. When you add up the various categories of the budget, we're squandering $1 trillion a year on endless wars that make us less safe, that don't make us more safe. So, the Democrats have thoroughly failed. In fact, they're leading the charge now in areas where they used to be considered the lesser evil. They're now arguably the greater evil in leading us into war, nuclear weapons, genocide, censorship, authoritarianism. It's every bit as bad from the Democrats. So it's really important not to accept the propaganda that tells you you are powerless and that tells you you have no choice. That is an extremely anti-democratic notion that you don't have a right to choose. And in fact, to look at polls, voters are very clear. They want other choices, especially if it's the same old being rammed down our throats. So I'd
But at
say
the end of
don't let the
the
DNC define this for you.
day,
I'd
but
say
at the end of
stand
the
up for
day,
yourself.
but at the end of the day, America is a two-party system. And granted, both parties are, two heads of the same monster.
The
But there
question
is.
is, do we want to accept that? Because we really don't have a future right now. To look at the economy, which is basically crashing and burning for working people, over 60% of workers now are living paycheck to paycheck. Half of people who are renting their place to live are severely economically stressed right now. You have 44 million young people and not so young people who are trapped into student debt, 100 million in medical debt. The numbers of people who are saying they're not going to vote is off the charts right now. And this is a myth that, the Democrats own your vote or Donald Trump owns your vote. They don't own your vote. They have to earn your vote. And the powers that be want you to believe that your vote is being owned. But in fact, it's not. And this is about us empowering ourselves to rescue our future. Because right now, we don't have a future. Our future right now is debt, it's evictions, which are skyrocketing. Homelessness is at a higher rate than it's ever been. We are the wealthiest country, in the world. Throughout all of history, yet, it's just shocking the skyrocketing numbers of poverty. You have a Congress now with the two parties directing it and the White House that basically won't renew the child poverty tax credit. So you have numbers of children in poverty that have doubled so that we can spend $140 billion now on a war in Ukraine and supporting the economy in Ukraine while tens of millions are going without housing and food and healthcare in this country. It is
Right.
outrageous. And if we don't shut it down, you can be sure that's more of what you're going to get.
Right. And your point is is well taken. I mean, the richest country in the world and tens of millions of children go to bed hungry each night, which is unfathomable, and people are sleeping in the streets and in all the big cities and so on. So I mean, this is obviously it's glaring at us. But I want to go back. I want to push you some more on this issue. And when Ralph Nader was blamed for the George Bush victory.
Which was
And
also nonsense because he
of
was
course, I
one of
agree.
five
I want to hear
candidates.
that from you, but it's still out there. People are still saying this. People who are
Well, it
progressive
depends who you're listening to.
are still blaming him for that.
It depends who you're listening to. If you're inside the circles of power, and especially if you're in Washington, D.C., you are going to hear the echo chamber of oligarchy and the paid off politicians who are in bed with their big donors. That's what you're going to hear. That's what you're going to hear if you're listening to mainstream media. But you know what? Fewer and fewer people, especially under 35, are listening to that. We've just barely come out of the starting gate, and already our campaign is at 10% among people under 35. So
What does that mean?
you don't have to convince people whose lives are being ruined.
What is
And
this
it's
10%?
really important. What's
What does that
that?
mean? What does that mean, this 10% that you just mentioned?
Oh, we're running 10% in the polls as to first choice for presidential candidate, segregated, or sectioned by age. So if you look at people who are under 35, who are really a bellwether for the way the wind is blowing and also the way that trends are going over the years, already we are at 10%. We're at 9% actually among the African American community as well, having had virtually no coverage whatsoever and only having just begun. So my point is, don't lie down on the railroad tracks. The train is coming, and it's coming for you. There is a very powerful rebellion that's going on right now. It's in full swing, and we have nothing to lose because it's BS that Trump is the worst option than Biden. The differences are slimmer than ever, and arguably on many issues, it's actually the Democrats who are the greater evil. If you're looking at nuclear weapons, if you're looking at genocide, what is there worse, than genocide and militarism that's just gone totally off the rails? And it's the Democrats now who are leading the charge and who vote unanimously for these accelerating military budgets while tens of millions of people are going without, food, without health care, and whose housing is very much at risk. It's like 3 million people were evicted last year. Those numbers are skyrocketing. Are we going to say that that's okay? The powers that be are working overtime to convince you that you have no choice. Because if you think you have no choice, then you do have no choice. But the reality is that you very much do have a choice. And to look at the polls, you not only have a choice, but you also have the wind at your back. And this is the time for us to stand up because we are on a launching pad right now for oblivion. And, whether you're looking at health care, whether you're looking at our jobs, inflation, war, the risk of nuclear weapons, the climate crisis, housing, it's all in the tank and it's getting worse. It's not getting better. And if you believe that you have no choice except to accept that you're screwed, well, then I have a bridge in Brooklyn that I'd like to sell you.
So I want to put one more. I'm going to push on this one more time, just on one more issue, which is the things that scare people the most is that Trump coming back is a guarantee for full fascism. It means judicial nominations, environment, things going far worse than they would under Biden.
Yeah,
And
well, that's exactly the
the fear
point.
is that, and the fear is that not voting for Biden is going to make things so much worse by having him on these particular issues. And of course, immigration, we and I talked about asylum seekers, which is, and these are issues that touch real people's, lives, of course, healthcare and so on, you touched on. But isn't there, is this fear, what should people do with this fear? I mean, the sense that Trump come back, or even if it's not Trump, even if it's Nikki Haley, I don't know who it's going to be. Trump might be in jail. But if it's one of those people, then the march to fascism is going to be much more direct and much faster.
So let me say, it's very rich for the party which is leading the charge on genocide to be screaming about the other party being fascist. We have two fascist parties right now, and I'd say it's really important to reject their propaganda and to actually look at the facts on the ground, because you don't get much more fascist than conducting a genocidal war, which is what's going on right now in Israel and and Palestine. And likewise, you know, the war in Ukraine was absolutely avoidable. It's a horrific and illegal criminal war, but it could have been avoided. It could have been stopped 1 month into the program. You know, it's really important not to just take the propaganda of the powers that be at face value. On judicial nominations, well, remember this. This was the big issue back in 2016. It was, oh, the Supreme Court. Well, why? You know, because of, especially because of women's right to choose. Well, the Democrats had 60 years to codify that ruling, the Supreme Court ruling. They had 60 years to write it into law, and they had several administrations where they could have overridden any veto, or where they could have pushed through and codified Roe v. Wade to ensure that women would have the right to choose and this wouldn't be subject to a judicial appeal. Likewise, looking at court nominations, you have collaboration of the Democrats who have just rubber stamped the Republican nominations for the courts of appeals and the federal courts too. So the Democrats want you to think it's a Republican problem, but very often it's actually mostly a Democrat problem. And let me talk about climate for 1 minute, because we
Please.
hear all the time about the terrible things that Trump and the Republicans are doing. And that's certainly true. But you're not seeing what's going on under the surface. You scratch the surface of the Democrats' policies, and they're basically about as bad. Right now, Joe Biden is in the process of ramming through 22 new LNG export facilities. Those facilities don't count on the special roster of climate emissions because they're being
What is
imported.
LNG? What does LNG stand for?
Oh, okay. So LNG, that's like natural gas. That's like how lots of people heat their homes. And it's also a thing called methane, which is very, very toxic for the climate. It's way worse than burning other kinds of fossil fuels, if it's emitted to the atmosphere. So it's a big climate change gas. And the Democrats are in the process of approving 22 of these. And if those emissions get counted, its impact on the climate, if it were to be counted, and conveniently it's not counted, just like our emissions in conducting war and the military, those don't get counted either. Conveniently, they are not counted. But if you were to count these new LNG, liquid natural gas, or methane plants that are being approved by the Biden administration, they're not all approved yet, but they are on their way. If those were actually counted in the emissions tally, we would be knocked back to the year 2005. Not only are we not making progress, but it actually reverses all the progress of the last 20 years. So, you know, and Joe Biden, who promised there would be no fossil fuel extraction on public lands, no further sales and auctions of public lands, that's baloney. This big so-called climate bill that they passed, the Inflation Reduction Act, it actually requires there to be 60 million acres of offshore water that's given over to auction for fossil fuels. 60 acres every year for 10 years before any major projects can be done on renewable energy. So if you actually dig below the hype, this is garbage. This is like Obama's all of the above. All of the above doesn't help the climate. Not one bit. Renewable energy by itself doesn't do it. You actually have to eliminate fossil fuels and make a complete transition. So the point is here, if you start actually looking at the facts on the ground, this is BS. And don't let them scare you. This is about extortion. This is about extorting your vote based on fear campaigns and smear campaigns. Just look at your life. And people who aren't subject to this 24/7 wall-to-wall propaganda, they have no question that they are moving on. And we're seeing this from people all over the place, especially people who are younger and have no future to look forward to.
Well, if you're just joining us now, you're listening to the Mikko Pellett Hour. I'm Mikko Pellett, and I'm in conversation with Dr. Jill Stein, who is running for president for the Green Party. We're going to be talking about a lot of issues, or as many as we can cover in this hour. I think we should talk about how minorities feel about the possibility of a Trump comeback and what it would mean to give you the vote. I want to talk about Cuba, and of course, you mentioned the word genocide several times, and you and I think agree that we're talking about what is taking place in Palestine. So, if anybody who is listening right now is African American or has come from any part of Latin America, it's scary, the thought of Trump with his vitriol, which is with his rhetoric and with his policies. I can't imagine how terrifying that must be. And I don't know what people tell their children when there's this possibility of this man returning or somebody like him. Again, he might be in jail. Hopefully he will be, but there might be somebody else coming instead. So what do you say to people who are, minorities who are, or Native Americans and so on? What do you say to people like that? Why should they give the vote rather than give a vote that would guarantee, that would, save them from seeing Trump return, give the vote to you?
So, Miko, I don't know where you're getting your information from, but you're basically regurgitating the Democratic Party talking points, and they are not consistent with the facts, unfortunately. Because if you look at the polls, you see people are screaming and running with their hair on fire away from the Democratic Party, which is why the Democratic Party is once again freaking out. And once again, it is trying to smear every opposition candidate out there. It is trying to throw us off the ballot and use basically dirty tricks, which is what they always do. This is nonsense. In 2016, the people who voted for me were not Hillary Clinton voters. That's absolute nonsense. These are people who had already thrown in the towel on a party that has thrown in the towel on people of color. Remember, things are getting worse. They're not getting better. If you are a person of color, your income is being pushed down relative to the white community right now. It's roughly ab about 10% of, if you're in a black family, your income is about 10% of a white family's income. And this is far worse than it was even 60 years ago. So things are getting worse. And how are they getting worse? Because the Democrats tell you, oh, we're better than the Republicans, so you have to vote for us. Don't let your vote be taken for granted. Candidates have to earn your vote. They don't own your vote. And as I said, if you look at the facts on the ground, the Democrats are not better. And we're seeing people make these decisions based on their experience. They don't need some politician to instruct them or to teach them about what's happening under Biden or even what happened under Barack Obama. An African American president who was, it was great to have an African American president, but he gave away the store to Wall Street. And a lot of progressive voters at that time began to switch over to Trump. In fact, here's probably the most instructive election of all. This was after the Wall Street bailouts, when the economy crashed, thanks to Bill Clinton and his treasurer, Larry Summers, who basically gave away the store to Wall Street. They deregulated the Wall Street banks, and the banks went crazy on their predatory mortgages, and people got screwed. Who really got screwed? Above all, it was the African American community who got screwed and whose income just went into the tank with the Wall Street bailouts and the housing crisis. About 7, 8 million homeowners were thrown out of their homes. And what did Obama and the two Democratic houses of Congress decide to do? They bailed out Wall Street. They threw out homeowners and they bailed out Wall Street. What happened in the next election? There was no third party to blame it on, but the Democrats lost 1,000 seats in state houses across the country. They lost 64 congressional seats in the US Congress, and they lost 12 seats in the Senate and they lost 13 governorships. That's what a spoiled election is about, and the Democrats have spoiled it for themselves. They try to blame it on their competition because they are scared. I won't say the word. They are quaking in their boots about their competition because people have had enough. And they rely on their own useful idiots to parrot this through the media so that people get the message all over the place. Oh, we don't dare eat a peach. We don't dare stand up for ourselves, even though we are losing our homes and our health care and our lives, and we're locked into debt. Don't you dare vote for yourself. Well, reject that. We need to stand up with the courage of our convictions because if ever there was a tipping point, we are at that tipping point right now. People are in rebellion and they are in a political rebellion. This is the time to stand up and use our democratic rights and say to the politicians who want to keep you under their thumb, to say to them that they have to earn your vote. They don't own your vote. And to look at their policies of the last several decades, they are not earning your vote. They are throwing you under the bus.
Now, if somebody does want to vote for a third-party candidate, there's more than one, and so which I have to admit is baffling. I mean, I grew up with the parliamentary system as an Israeli, and so I've got 1,000 political parties, and it's chaos, and there's always negotiating and so forth. But in America, that doesn't exist. So now we've got the two main parties, and then you've got several smaller parties that are running as third-party candidates. How do you choose? I mean, Dr. West is obviously has a name and a reputation, and people like him a lot. I think there might be a few others, but what I mean, as progressives, as people who are dedicated to left values, how do we reconcile? Where do we go as a consumer, as a
So,
voter?
sure. So, just to be really straightforward, there are three candidates who basically have the same agenda. Our agenda is essentially identical with Cornel West's agenda and is basically the same, pretty much as far as I can see, with a small socialist party called the Party of Socialism and Liberation, usually abbreviated PSL. And they have a wonderful candidate, Claudia de la Cruz, who's running. And all of these candidates, to my mind, are wonderful. Here's the difference between them. The Greens will get on the ballot in just about every state. And if all goes according to plan, we will be on the ballot for every voter. The other two will not. And
Why? Can
we'll, why?
you explain that?
Okay, so this is another kind of dirty trick used by the Democratic and Republican parties because they are the big kids, in the schoolyard. They're the bullies in the schoolyard. So they write the rules to make it very, very difficult for any competitor to get on the ballot and actually provide a real choice. They want to deny you your choices. Now, why would they be doing that? Because they're very worried that if you actually have freedom of choice, you are not going to choose them because they have a different master. They have a corporate master. They take big money from very deep pockets, the war industry, big pharma, the health insurance industry, fossil fuels, the banks and financial services, the usual suspects. That's who their true master is. And they just give us the lip service. So they're very nervous about our being on the ballot. RFK might get on the ballot, but he's not yet. I mean, right now we have 75% of the work done to be on the ballot all across the country now. It's half of the states, approximately, but that half includes some of the biggest, most difficult, and expensive states. So the Greens are already there. The other candidates are not. Dr. West is on one ballot in one small state, and Claudia is probably going to be on in California, but That may be it. So if you're looking for a candidate with a great message, you've got three of them. And candidates who are, really dynamite messengers, you've got three of them. But if you're looking for a candidate who can actually fight the empire, who can actually get on the ballot and contest for power, not be a message campaign, but actually be a real campaign that can not only win power, but can push the envelope on our policies. As Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. You have to be on the ballot if you're going to make that demand. Otherwise, they can just, you're just water that runs off their back. You don't have any traction if you can't compete with them for votes and if you're not in the election dialogue. In order to do that, you got to be on the ballot. Right now, we are the only people-powered campaign, the only pro-worker, anti-war, climate emergency campaign that is heading for full ballot access and a real fight, contesting for power with empire and oligarchy. We are that alternative.
What would it take? What would it take to get these three candidates all together as a coalition to run together?
That's a really good question. I mean, we've extended a an invitation to Dr. West to consider running with a joint ticket. So far, he's saying no. Because he has a powerful solo voice
But
that's
are there certain conditions that need to be met? I mean, if the three of you were to run together, is there a scenario? Is there a platform? Is there
Oh, absolutely.
kind
Well, put
of
it this way. I
what
think
would it take?
our platforms are already consistent.
So what do you think it was, what do you think is preventing that?
I
It's an
think
ideology.
potentially in the cards, if the candidates are willing, and we are in the process of reaching out to see who's willing. I know that there are various organizations that are trying to get us together and have debates. And we've said, hey, we'll be there. We think at the end of the day, this is all about coalitions. This is about bringing our groups and our parties together. We need a broad progressive coalition. We're there. And in past elections, we have been very active in building coalitions. So we're still doing that. But not everybody wants to do that. We'll see what happens. And we have put out an appeal to Dr. West already. In fact, I was his campaign manager at the outset. He initially started with the People's Party, and then he decided that wasn't going to work. And we opened our ballot lines to him and basically gave him millions of dollars worth of ballot lines. And then he decided that he preferred to run solo. So that's how that happened. It's hard. It's very hard to build a relationship with a political party in the heat of the fire.
Right.
I had to run for office several times as a Green before I could figure out how does this actually work? How do you as a candidate work with the party? They all have their own rules and their own structures, and it's a complicated thing. But after about three elections, I finally figured out how to do it. So I don't fault Dr. West in the least for deciding that it was just more straightforward. It's his first run. He's never run for any office. So it's really remarkable that he's able to do this. He's a fabulous spokesperson, and his voice really, elevates the race. So it's a wonderful thing. Yes, I think we should get together, and I'm trying to find ways to do that, but not everybody wants to get together. At the end of the day, we are the ones who are going to be on the ballot, so it would certainly behoove other candidates to work with us.
On this thought, we're going to take a break. This is the Micro Pellet Hour. We're talking to Dr. Jill Stein, who's running for president, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is the Micro Pellet Hour. I'm Micro Pellet, your host, and I am speaking with Dr. Jill Stein, running for president for the Green Party, not for the first time. Let's talk. You and I discussed. My son is very much involved in immigration issues and asylum seekers, And he expressed, a great deal of concern about, not that there's any doubt that voting for you and your platform is justified, but except for the issue of, again, that opens the door to the, Trump monstrosity. And I remember too, I mean, I remember living when I was living in California, friends of mine who came in from Latin America, and their kids would listen to Trump and would be terrified.
Well,
What's it
lots of
happened
Latinos
once?
now are actually moving over to Trump because they're so pissed at Biden. And the same is true, in the Muslim community. So that just doesn't hold anymore.
Yeah,
It's just not true. And you are hearing the echoes of the propaganda that the Democrats have always relied on in order to extort your vote. That's what's going on here. This is extortion. I'd say pay attention. Look at the facts on the ground. If you read what the immigration and the asylum advocacy groups are saying, it's like Biden did not deliver. He completely betrayed the agenda that he promised. And now he's negotiating for even worse in order to get his Ukraine funding through Congress. And let me just say that both parties are absolutely lunatic. Maybe I shouldn't use that word, but they're just, they're violent and they're vile on the whole issue of immigration. The thought that we should be punishing people who are coming to this country because they've been forced to flee by the policies of the Democrats and Republicans, which have created warring camps all over the world, basically. We have sent our military into 250 different interventions in just the last 30 years. So if you look at where the immigrants are streaming out of, it's El Salvador, it's Honduras, it's the places where we have really intervened, and Guatemala, for example, where we've created just these human rights abuses and these horrific militarized dictatorships that have left a long-standing trail of violence. That's what's driving immigration. So, well, that's one of the things. And then you have kind of sanctions that are imposed on Cuba, on Nicaragua, on Venezuela, and are driving a whole stream of immigrants from the economic chaos, resulting in very large measure from our economic sanctions, which are unjust and illegal. And then you have the climate crisis, which is also driving huge migrations. And the UN now predicts that there may be 1 billion climate migrants by the time we get to 2050, which is not so very far away. So people who are worried about substantive issues and the welfare of immigrants, you're barking up the wrong tree to think that Democrats or Republicans are going to fix this for you. We need actual transformative change in the same way that we also do on our military policies, because both parties right now, this is one thing they can agree on, and they try to outdo each other on who can spend more on, this war heading towards, or this Cold War that's in the process of turning hot, like with China, or, the hot war that's actually going on now in Ukraine, which we laid the groundwork for really for decades by pushing NATO to the east, which we promised we would not do. This was totally predictable and absolutely predicted. And every step of the way, Russia was saying, here's the agreement. Will you just agree for Ukraine to be neutral, essentially, for to be neutral like Austria? This wasn't like rocket science. And in fact, this was incorporated into the Accords. I forget what it was called, but there was a treaty before the war that fell apart, in part because the US opposed it, as did its vassals in the UK. And so it turned out to be a sham. But it's not rocket science how to solve these problems. But we cannot continue to be ruled by empire and oligarchy and think that we are going to get out of here alive. Student debt, which Joe Biden just reactivated, he didn't need to, but he voluntarily went ahead and forced the payments to be conducted again. Trump had suspended them and Biden brought them back on. So, this is the problem that the Democrats have, in that Trump is not fitting into the worst case scenario. In some cases, it's actually Biden. But 40% of students in debt defaulted on their first payment because they can't pay it. They don't have the jobs. They don't have families. They don't have a place to live. They don't have a future. And guess what? They know it. They are in rebellion. It's just a question of how long it's going to take because the parties of empire and oligarchy are not changing their ways. They have made that absolutely painfully clear. And as Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without that demand. If
I'd
the
love to
young
see it.
people who are being slaughtered on this front do not stand up for themselves, it's going to really drag the whole rebellion down. There are a lot of people, including African Americans and Latinos right now, who are leading the way. And the fortunate, well-educated advocacy community needs to get with the leadership in the community that they're serving and actually stand up on their behalf and not compromise their future.
I'd love to see you on the debate stage with some of these with these people. You know, I have this I have this premonition. I think Liz Cheney, if she's not going to run this time, she's probably going to be a candidate for president soon. And I think a debate between you and her would be a very good thing for Americans to see, because I think she represents this, you know, slightly right to Mussolini kind of state of mind. And you bring forward this, you know, this sanity and clarity. So I think I have a feeling she's going to be, because if she ran, I think she would beat any Republican and probably any Democrat. I want to talk
And I'll just
about.
underscore that there are very interesting dynamics here because RFK, has adopted a very militaristic policy on the Middle East, and who is not standing up for workers' rights or healthcare. I mean, he's full of flowery language, which now mostly boils down to, I'm a Kennedy, I can bring people together, take my word for it, but the policies aren't there. So, he's going to draw, it's now evident in the polls that he's drawing from Trump. And then you may have no labels in there, which may also be drawing that they're a corporate front group. They're funded by big money, basically, very deep pockets and billionaires. They are likely to draw from both parties, but especially from the Republicans. So you may have the corporate suits all drawing down on their vote and leaving the progressive vote, which is a majoritarian vote. If we stand up with the courage of our convictions, we actually have a majority who want living wages, the right to form a union, healthcare as a human right, a true security policy that makes us more secure, not less secure, not giving away the store to the war
And
profiteers.
people are not afraid of the word socialism. That's the other thing. I mean, people have grown afraid of the word socialism. But I want to move
Have
on to.
grown afraid or have grown unafraid because Bernie, you'll from the suits in DC, you're going to hear that they're afraid. But if you actually look at the polls among people, socialism is a popular word. It's way more popular than Congress, and Congress is owned right now by AIPAC, which is not popular whatsoever. So I'd say if you're living in DC, it's really important to turn your filters on. Otherwise, you just become a kind of a servant of the propaganda.
Well, I want to talk about Cuba and I want to talk about Palestine, and it's there's an interesting dynamic with those two issues, because as an American, you're supposed to hate Cuba and love Israel, whereas I think if you're paying attention, it should be the other way around. And so I went to Cuba this summer, and you know, they look back at the Obama years, of course, the good old days, and they're like suffering now more than they've suffered ever before. And they stand with their convictions, and they're standing up for Palestine, and they're doing all the things that if they didn't do, their situation would be much, much better. But they're standing up to their convictions. So I want to hear your thoughts about Cuba, and then I want to leave time, of course, to talk about Palestine. We'll leave that maybe to the last part of the show. If you're joining us now, this is the Mikko Pellad Hour. I'm Mikko Pellad. And you're listening to my conversation with Dr. Jill Stein, candidate for president for the Green Party. So let's talk about Cuba for a minute. There are a lot of people here in DC that I know, some very serious activists who are very much involved in and care very deeply about Cuba and want to see the sanctions, canceled, and Cubans living being allowed to live their lives freely. And also, by the same token, want to see Palestine free. But let's start with Cuba.
I don't think there's any rocket science here. This is about just throwing away these old and very counterproductive policies. We've been fighting a people's revolution. In doing that, you kind of force the government to be more authoritarian. This isn't to say Cuba is the perfect government, but we're not the perfect government. And who are we to be interfering in Cuba's internal affairs? I mean, we've been screaming that Russia should not be interfering with Ukraine. Well, we need to stop interfering with our neighbor who's not interfering with us. When Russia tried to place its nuclear missiles in Cuba, we launched our bombs. Our bombs were in the air, and JFK, our President Kennedy, and Khrushchev had the good sense to sit down and negotiate and basically work it out. And Russia pulled back its missiles, which, by the way, were placed because we had put nuclear missiles in target distance of Moscow. We had missiles in Turkey. And so there was a reciprocal arrangement. We had essentially provoked Russia to put its missiles in Cuba. Anyhow, it got solved. And we need to be into that problem-solving mindset right now with regard to Ukraine, but more closer to home, we should be into that problem-solving mindset and non-interference with Cuba. And Cuba's done some remarkable things. They have a very fabulous healthcare system. Everybody has healthcare. They're dirt poor, and their longevity and their public health statistics, the welfare of mothers and infants is better than ours. Though we're spending way more on healthcare and have all the bells and whistles of a very sophisticated system, but it's got huge holes in it. And there are what, like 100 and it's 87 million Americans who do not have adequate healthcare. Yeah, either they have no insurance or they have inadequate insurance. And Cuba's doing this for a tiny amount. Cuba manufactured its own vaccines, protected its people pretty well from the COVID epidemic. So Cuba's doing some wonderful and exemplary things. We need to get out of their way, and we need to stop provoking a more authoritarian government by constantly trying to take it down. How many times did we try to assassinate Fidel Castro? It's more than you can count, really. We need to back off and
It
put
hasn't
an
worked. It
end
hasn't
to
worked. It
it.
hasn't worked. I mean, there's another similarity with Palestine is the, all these attempts to bring down the, communists and bring down the communists, and it's not working. I mean, the Cuban government is quite stable, and it reminds me of Palestine. And I'm going to segue into Palestine now. Israel and the U.S. have been talking about stopping or bringing down or ending whatever Palestinian resistance. Is the most famous name at the time. It was different ones. Now it happens to be Hamas. You can't bring it down. It's not working. It's not working. As long as there's a problem of oppression and occupation, the Palestinians are not going to resist. If it's not called Hamas, it'll be called something else. If it was used to be called Fatah, whatever. All the names and the organization might change, but the idea of resistance for people who are seeking liberation will never change. Now, there's still a lot of people, even who are borderline progressive, that view Israel as this as a shining light, as something that America needs to support. And of course, that's obviously, in my opinion, complete nonsense. Talk a little bit about your thoughts. And again, you and I met when we met a few years ago. We talked about this, and I told you one of the reasons I joined the Green Party was the platform on Palestine, the platform that calls for free. Single democracy with equal rights on all of historic Palestine, which to me is the only recipe to bring about peace between Israelis and Palestinians. But I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I grew up, a Jew, going to Sunday school every Sunday to learn about Reform Judaism. And, this was, I was
So
born.
you're Jewish.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to clarify that because I
Yeah.
think a lot of people know that. Yeah.
Oh, yes, I am Jewish. And as I say, I went to religious school as a kid. I was confirmed. I was a in the Reform branch of Judaism. So we don't do, we don't learn Hebrew. We don't, we don't practice kosher, habits and stuff like that. My grandparents were extremely religious, and
Where did they come from?
they were from, I think, what is Poland today. And all of my grandparents, on both sides, had fled the pogroms. They were small children, but their parents, let's see, actually, they came over as young children, and their families were threatened. And at that time, young children were being recruited into the Russian army. And that's how, that's how one of the ways that the pogroms were practiced is that your kids would be basically killed, sent off to fight at age 5, 6, and 7. It was horrible, and that was part of sort of the instability of Europe throughout the 1800s and going into the 1900s, where there was a lot of turnover and there was a huge epidemic of anti-Semitism. So that is real and traumatizing. And I'm sympathetic to that trauma. But I also grew up with the conviction that the Holocaust and genocide would not happen again. And to look at actually the facts on the ground, that 21,000 Palestinians have died in the air campaign and the ground campaign, that right at the outset, there was a complete shutdown of food, water, fuel, electricity, and medical care. So you had these deadly conditions that were imposed on civilians. The initial attack by Hamas, I am not, put it this way, I support international law and I don't sanction attacks on civilians. On the other hand, I understand that this was inevitable, and this is what happens when people are kept in prison and, denied everything, basically, administered food through an eyedropper, have their water supply essentially stolen out from under them. I mean, you drive people crazy, and you will have slave revolts, which were very violent back in the
Well, of course, I mean, as long as you maintain the oppression, you're going to get resistance. So if you want to stop the resistance, if you want to prevent resistance, then end the oppression. It's actually a very simple equation.
It is very simple. And I think it's really important to view this from 20,000 feet above. There's a very simple solution here. You have essentially a state that was founded with an ethnic cleansing paradigm. And 750 Palestinians were basically driven from their homes. Tens of
750,000.
thousands were killed. How many? Sorry.
750,000, you meant, yeah.
Yes, what did I say? Sorry.
750.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, 1,000. And there were tens of thousands who were killed in massacres even before the Nakba. I mean, so this had a very violent beginning from people who were traumatized, just like Hamas is traumatized. The Jews were traumatized in coming over, shortly after the Holocaust. There were a lot of traumatized people, walking around here in the founding of Israel. And because you have been genocided doesn't give you the right then to practice ethnic cleansing, which leads to genocide. Ethnic cleansing is extremely dangerous, and that's where genocide occurs. That's a whole discussion unto itself. But ethnic cleansing is about as bad. It's not like there's some hierarchy. It's all like
Well,
illegal.
they're connected. You can't separate one from the other because if you're going to embark on a campaign of ethnic cleansing, there will be people who refuse, and you're going to end up killing them.
That's
So you
right.
don't even know. I don't think there's actually an
And
actual number of how many thousands were killed in 1948 during the Nakba. How many thousands of Palestinians? Because they're still uncovering new graves, and new stories are coming up of
that's
massacre.
right. And when you are denying people food and water and medical care, and you're destroying their hospitals and their healthcare centers and their homes, and they're out living on the street, and there's no water, there's no sanitation. I mean, how are people changing their babies' diapers? You know, I mean, it's just like unthinkable how families are surviving right now, not to mention, I mean, the conditions are so dramatic. It sort of overwhelms the whole, you know, Hamas story. And then if you look beforehand, there was the same thing going on in a slightly, you know, in a kind of an ebb and flow fashion. But it was, you know, horrific from the start. That doesn't say that it wasn't horrific also for the Jews who were fleeing. Some were fleeing, some were not. But, you know, it's like Gandhi's saying that if we practice an eye for an eye, soon the world will be blind. And having been genocided doesn't give you the right then to practice genocide on others, you know. And this is why we need to invoke international law here. We don't have to invent the solution. This is about requiring all parties on all sides to comply with international law. That means no ethnic cleansing, no displacement, no destroying people's homes, no using starvation as a weapon. And by the way, 250,000 people were starving as of, you know, 10 days ago. The numbers are certainly much greater right now, and infectious diseases are breaking out as well. This is a setup, and this is one of those conditions in which ethnic cleansing will spill over, whether people refuse or not. People are going to start dying. They could start dying by the hundreds of thousands any day now, and we can't say when that will be because they're in such crowded
Candidates
and awful conditions.
and members of the administration and candidates for president are encouraging this ethnic cleansing and the pushing out of Palestinians out of Palestine again.
Exactly, which is why this is a political issue and there is a political solution. The actual solution to this problem is very simple: comply with international law. And the United States has the power to ensure that Israel complies because we are providing the bombs, we are providing these 2,000-pound bombs that are just slaughtering people by the hundreds. You know, that are being dropped on refugee camps. I mean, it's just staggering. The US is supplying the munitions, the bombs, the F-16s that are dropping them. You know, and we are providing the diplomatic cover in the United Nations. We are vetoing the consensus of the entire world community, with the exception of us and Israel and one or two other hangers-on. But there are regularly 150 to 170 countries of the world who are saying, "Oh my God, you can't do this." Even our European allies have now stopped giving cover to us and Israel. This is us and Israel, and we can stop this in the blink of an eye. And that's why, you know, this is another reason why. Don't let the propaganda of the Democrats who are telling you, "Oh, you're powerless. You have to vote for us. And by the way, you have to vote for genocide," and silence yourself if you want to object to that. Forget that, you know, because what we do in Gaza, we're going to do everywhere, you know. And Gaza is really it's kind of a microcosm of what's wrong with an imperial approach to foreign policy. This is unbelievably abusive, as many authors have said, and the authorities and the academics in genocide. What they say is that genocide is the product of certain conditions, and there but for the grace of God go you and I. That this is essentially kind of a human condition. Chris Hedges just did a beautiful couple articles about this, about how this is the product of certain conditions where one group has power and the other has none. And then the group with the power gets into its head that it is a victim and it's very insecure and it strikes back. And there are certain kinds of predictable conditions which are all being fulfilled right now, and they can be stopped. As much as this is predictable how to start it, it's also predictable how to stop it. And we can stop it. International law allows us to do this. And thank goodness that South Africa has just now brought this issue to the International Court of Justice, which has the authority to rule on it.
Yeah.
The problem, and to find our leaders, not only Netanyahu, but Joe Biden and the heads, you know, Anthony Blinken, and perhaps the people in Congress as well, to be complicit and essentially war criminals, worse
Yeah.
than war criminals. These are practitioners of genocide, and they should be convicted and punished for it. They should be held accountable. And if we're going to do that, well, put it this way, we can avoid that, and our misleaders can avoid allowing this to spill over into genocide. It's like, as a medical doctor, I'm watching this knowing that we are on a death watch right now for 2.2 million people. And it may be hours, it may be days. If we're lucky, it may be a week or two or three, but we are on a death watch. And there are hundreds of thousands of people who are going to start falling like flies. In fact, they already are. There's some 300,000 right now who already have contagious infectious diseases, which could spiral out of control because they're all being jammed into this tiny little area and they don't have adequate sleeping quarters. They don't have they don't have a blanket or a pillow to rest their heads on. I mean, they're being essentially tortured. Every day is really a tortured form of existence right now, especially for children, who are just completely freaked out. How do you comfort a child, who's been bloodied and battered and soiled in their own clothes and has no place to change or to wash? I mean, these are just like unthinkable, barbaric conditions. And it doesn't matter how sympathetic you are to Israel. When you see what's going on here, it is impossible. It is impossible unless your heart has actually gone stone cold dead, and your soul has disappeared. You can't help but recognize just the desperate human conditions that are being inflicted now on innocent civilians and children, especially. So this is like the ultimate expression of what's wrong with empire and raw militarism that can tip over into genocide when the conditions apply. And we have to stop that. We can stop that, and you can stop it. Everyone who's listening and watching can stop this. We're going to be circulating a pledge soon to voters to say we are going to deny our support, withhold our support, and not give our support to genocidal candidates. And that's Biden and Trump and most of the others, with the exception of those three that I named before, myself, Dr. West, and Claudia De La Cruz. We are the only candidates that are opposing genocide. And so this is not just being done for one campaign or another. We're suggesting this, and we hope to get Dr. West and Claudia De La Cruz to both sign on to this and for us to help promote this as, as an act of collective humanity to say we've got to stand up and say we are done with genocide and we are done with all of the candidates and the elected officials who support it. We need a complete
And with
overhaul
that,
of our political system.
thank you so much. With that, we have to finish now. We could talk on forever, but thank you so much for your time, Jill. It's been a pleasure talking to you. This is inspiring. I really.
JillStein2024.org. That's where you can find out about this pledge to push the envelope politically and use your political power to put an end to this.
Palestine2024.org.
That's right.
Right.
Yes. Or
Thank you
dot
so
com.
much.
Or dot com.
I gotta close now. Coming up right after this is Soul Conversations. I'm Mikko Peled. Thank you for joining the Mikko Peled Hour. And thank you, Jill Stein, for your wonderful comments and for this interview.
Thank you so much, Miko. You're always an inspiration.